Good evening. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. I think we have Kirk with us. I think maybe perhaps JB as well. I know we do not have Larry this evening.
Well, happy Shabbat.
Happy Shabbat. We're going to continue with the 23rd Psalm. Got into it primarily because there was a reference to Shepherd in a passage that we were considering, and not so much in a passage, it was more just in the spelling of Yahweh's title. You know, the title Almighty combines the empowered lamb, the ram's head, the one who was able to protect and to lead with a shepherd's staff. So I think that's how we came to the 23rd Psalm. And we've come to realize that the 23rd Psalm is not distinct in and of itself. It isn't and shouldn't be considered by itself. And that's because we've realized, and it was primarily because of Chuck, that the 23rd Psalm is the conclusion of, the continuation of, the 22nd. Why is that, Kirk?
Well, because you've got the fulfillment of the Moed Mikre, the first three, on the 22nd. That's the description of everything that's going to happen over that period of time. And then you have the results of that, which are very apparent when you, in context, when you think about it, of Shabuah, to be empowered and to be enriched, and what the results of those things are.
Yeah, and with the consequences, if you avail yourself of the first four Moed Mikre. In other words, what the benefits are if you participate in the covenant. Mm-hmm. And that's really how the 23rd Psalm is going to end. It's going to extol the benefits of being part of the covenant. What I find is interesting is that there's almost nothing as utterly painful as reading the 22nd Psalm.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts off sad. And grows really discouraging. Yeah.
It's it should bring you to tears if you have any feeling at all. I mean, it's just
no, exactly. It is extraordinarily sad, and in the sense that the 23rd Psalm is predicting crucifixion. It is telling us exactly when and how Yahweh would fulfill the Mikra of Pesach as the sacrificial lamb, and how he would come to be separated from God. Mm-hmm. And it begins, Kirk, really with what I think is one of the most important statements in the whole of the prophets and Psalms.
Mm-hmm.
My God, why have you separated yourself from me?
Yeah.
Now, why do you think I would list that as, I mean, it's a fairly, it's, in fact, it's a question. It's not even a statement. Why would you think that is among the most important?
Because it describes something that is totally missed by apparently the entire religious world. That what Yahushua was and how he was separated from God, and therefore he's not the Jesus Christ, King of Kings, and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It first it ties his deeds, mm-hmm. his words, to the Torah, prophets, and Psalms.
Right, and his mission. Right.
Yeah, because he's quoting the 22nd Psalm at the very moment that he is fulfilling the first of the seven Moed Mikre.
Mm-hmm.
So he is announcing that this event does not stand on its own. This event is part of what I have promised to do. So that's stunning in of itself, because I've always said that if you don't know that Yahushua walked out of the pages of the Torah, the prophets, and the Psalms, if you'd understand what he was doing on Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, as it's described in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, his sacrifice is absolutely meaningless.
To no avail to you, yeah.
Yeah, whatsoever. You can't benefit from them unless you also observe Pesach, Matzah, and Makudim as he observed them. You know, you're not the sacrificial lamb, but you dine, you feast upon the sacrificial lamb. You know, you don't get to be yeasted. You enjoy the benefits of having sin removed, being unyeasted.
Right.
And you, like he, get the benefits of being born into Yahweh's covenant family. So if you don't understand what he was doing as it was described, as it was promised in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, what he did is of absolute no meaning to you whatsoever, no benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other aspect is that Christianity is based upon this false notion that God somehow died, that God died for your sins. Well, God can't die.
No.
And so, and his death would not resolve the issue of sin.
Hmm.
No. Separation is the penalty for rebellion. Death is the consequence of ignorance. Separation is the consequence of actively engaging in that which is revolting, which is oppressive, which is misleading. So this notion that God died is completely and totally torn asunder when he says, my God, why have you separated yourself from me? Why have you forsaken me?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it completely undermines the central plank of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And the other aspect of it is that not only wasn't God the sacrificial lamb, but instead Yosha's body served in that role.
Mm-hmm.
But that if Yosha had a God, if he's talking to God, if God separated himself from him, he could not have been the totality of God, as Paul lamely claims, stupidly claims. But to pray to him as if he were God is just utterly ridiculous. Who was he talking to at that moment?
He's talking to Yahweh.
Yeah. And therefore, if we're to follow his example, Christians claim they follow his example, who should they talk to?
I think we go back to Yahweh.
Yeah. And you notice he's even asking a question. That's how we learn.
Right. Wow. You know, he starts his mission with a passage in Isaiah, mm-hmm. and then he ends it with a passage in, that's Torah from the start to the finish.
Right, in the Psalms, yeah. Yeah, the passage in Isaiah speaks about the fulfillment of the Yobel and
mm-hmm.
how the Yobel is being completed in him.
Mm-hmm.
And it speaks that he represents the basis of the Yobel and Yashaya. And what that was his first public declaration. He walked into the synagogue on the Shabbat, not the mm-hmm. first day of the week, not on Sunday.
No, not on Sunday.
So again, if you're a Christian and you claim to be following him, you're lying to yourself if you go to a church on Sunday. He went to the synagogue, right, on the Shabbat. And if you're not doing that, then you're wrong. And he opened the scroll to Yashaya, Isaiah, to the what you would dismiss as the Old Testament. That's mm-hmm. where he read. So if you're reading a New Testament, you're not reading the same book.
No.
And then what he said is that he is the living embodiment of the Yobel, and that this is the year of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
This is the year of forgiveness, which is the basis of the Yobel. Yobel years,
mm-hmm.
All slaves are freed,
mm-hmm.
all debts are forgiven.
Debts are forgiven, right.
He's just saying, understand that I'm the living embodiment of the Yobel. This is the ultimate Yobel year. This is year 4,000 Yah. And I'm going to, in year 4,000 Yah, this Yobel year, I'm going to fulfill the first four of the Moed Mikre to deliver on this promise for you. And I'm going to pay your debts. You know, it's beautifully stated. And then he tells us where to look if we want to understand what he's doing there.
Mm-hmm.
Read the 22nd Psalm. Tells you everything you need to know. So from there we transition into this the 23rd, because the 22nd tells us about his fulfillment of P Pesach, what he endured on Matzah, which is really, the vivid deprayal of Pesach is will just rip your heart out. And then Matzah is worse. But then you have the joy, returning to the light of Bukhurim. And it's another one of the things that Christians have no understanding of, because with Bukhurim, they are convinced that there was a bodily resurrection, and yet his body was long gone.
Mm-hmm.
And no one recognized him, which is why no one recognized him. So it brings us to the 23rd Psalm. Let's go ahead and read it. I realize now, Kirk, that there's no reason for me to do any translations, because we have a translation that's much better than mine. The boss above, he take care of me. Actually, there's no of there. Excuse my affinity for grammar. The boss above, he take care of me. Jalike, the sheep, and it's the sheep, Fama, take care his sheeps. He gone, give me everything I need. He let me lie down where the sweet and soft grass stay. He lead me by the water where I can rest. He give me kind of life. He lead me in the road that stay right, because I his guy.
So where did that come from? Why did somebody write that? This.
Why would you do that? Why would you?
I don't know.
I mean, you talk about blasphemy.
Yeah. It's just,
to blaspheme is to belittle. Talking about taking God down to a level that is contemptible, that's a level so stupid that he can't speak in any kind of an intelligible fashion. Which it's basically saying is, why would you want to read what God has to say since he is illiterate?
Yeah. Well, even the New Revised Version and such and such version and so forth, the whole thing, after a while, you say, well, why do we need to revise it? Why don't we get it right once?
Right. It's particularly sad because, correctly rendered, this is a powerful statement. Let's read where we were up to the point of shattering myths today. We had begun this, and it says, this is a mizmor, which is lyric set to medley, melody, of Dod, beloved. Yahweh is my shepherd, Ra'ah. He observes me, pays attention to me, focuses on me, guides me, nurtures me, tends to me, and protects me. Ra'ah, spelled with the aleph rather than the ain, means to see, to obtain understanding from the proper perspective through observation. What a shepherd does. And it tells us what our relationship is going to be with Yahweh in eternity.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be as observant as we are. He's going to guide us and take us to places where he himself is going to enjoy what he witnesses.
Yeah, that's quite a revelation there.
Yeah, it really is. I shall not be diminished. I shall not be decreased or void. I shall not be found lacking, nor have any unfulfilled need, nor ever be abated nor bereaved. Called imperfect, genuinely, truthful, actual, ongoing. So, beautiful sentiment there, because the previous psalm spoke about the physical death of the Passover lamb. And it found that Yosha suffered the penalty of separation because he was found wanting, because he bore all of our rebellion. And so by comparison, because of what he, as a consequence, because of what he has done, we aren't going to be found lacking. I think it's a direct comment on, because of what happened, what was stated in the 22nd Psalm,
mm-hmm.
This is the benefit for me. I'm not going to have to endure that. I'm not going to be found lacking. I'm not going to be diminished or cease to exist. It's really a direct consequence of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim,
mm-hmm.
that you won't be diminished.
Yeah.
And are found wanting or lacking in anything. You know, it's not saying that he is not going to want anything. He's going to want things for the rest of his life. He was a wanting sort of a guy.
Yeah.
In a
serious wanter.
Yeah, he was a serious and serial wanter.
Yeah.
But what it is saying here is that rather than him not wanting anything, which would be is equivalent to being dead,
mm-hmm.
he's not going to be found wanting.
Yeah.
Because he's accepted the benefits of the covenant. So in an abode, a befittingly beautiful residence, conducive to growing and to sprouting out and to shooting forth dasha from dasha and dashin, to be nourished, have vigorous health facilitated, to live with abundant prosperity, tremendous new growth, total freedom, complete satisfaction, and with a stalwart attitude. It's a word that's used interchangeably with Torah, Mishpat, and Chok. We spent a lot of time studying Torah,
yeah,
Mishpat, and Chok in the 119th Psalm.
Absolutely, we did.
He enables me to stretch out and recline appropriately sheltered after exerting myself. We're talking about the pace of eternity.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go out and explore with Yahweh observing right along with us, a gleeful and active participant, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about it.
See, I found that rather fascinating because we talk about 6+1 all the time and day
right.
of rest and
mm-hmm.
thing, but to think that that is a universal or eternal, I should say, approach to life.
Right.
I mean,
it's it's the pace of eternity. That's
yeah.
what we're going to do. That's what he's implying here, is that,
yeah.
is that since Shabbat means to rest and reflect, we are extrapolating here by making the connection, bien in Hebrew, between resting and reflecting and the Shabbat. So we're, and in Yahweh's testimony regarding the Shabbat, where we can engage and be active 6 days doing our own thing, but on the seventh day we rest and reflect, and we settle down in his company. So that's what we've got going on here. And he is telling us that the pace of eternity is going to be based upon the Shabbat, which
mm-hmm.
I view as really good news, because mm-hmm. while we all want to go off and explore, you know, you want to come back and share what you've seen, what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
You want to come back and listen to what other people have seen and done, because maybe they've done something that's even cooler than what we've done.
Yeah.
And if it's not even as cool, but it's still interesting, don't you want to know about
yeah.
it?
Absolutely. I mean, that's
and
that's
don't you want to share what you've accomplished, what you've seen, what you've made happen, what you've imagined, what you've
sure,
witnessed?
Everybody loves stories. That's the,
right.
that's the half the fun. Tell the story.
Right.
What happened then?
Right. Let's go off and do stuff for the equivalent of 6 days. Let's come back and party.
Yeah.
Break bread. Have some good wine. Sit around the campfire and enjoy one another's company. And then, you know, we'll go out again. That's the pace of eternity. That is what he's describing here. And he says that he's going to do this above the Almighty's waters, which is a symbol for life, a symbol for the nurseries of the very stars that create the universe, a symbol for the set-apart spirit, a symbol for cleansing. You know, you come back, you've been really engaged, you know, you're going to have a cleansing, if you will, and a renewal.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that the warm shower at the end of a good workout.
Yeah, recharge you.
Yeah. And we're going to do this from the perspective of being calm and composed, something we talked about last week, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you have that much energy and you're moving that fast and you have that kind of power, wouldn't you want to make certain that you're operating in a manner that's calm and composed?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been and out of the storm, so to speak. Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, you don't want to be helter-skelter and you know, on edge all the time. You know, somebody that is moving too fast and engaging too soon is really not the kind of person that takes in all that's happening. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Terry and I, we go and we look at these movies sometimes, and we kind of avoid the ones where the pace is so fast, so much, I'm exhausted at the end of 2 hours.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
I mean, who wants to live like that? I mean, I don't even like it for a 90-minute movie.
It's like a great symphony. Mm-hmm. The composers of great symphonies created periods of quietness where you can kind of relax, and then they ramp up into a crescendo, but they don't stay there. They go back into a moment where you can rest and reflect upon what you've just heard. Otherwise, rather than something that that stirs the soul, it's something that irritates the ears.
Well, I teach people when they paint that you have to, when you design and compose something, you have to have an area for the eye to rest. Otherwise, they'll turn away from it. What good is it to have a visual product that nobody wants to look at, because you can't look at it? It's like a polka-dotted dress. You just, after a while, you can't stand it.
Right.
So that's true of everything, sure.
Yes. So calm and composed. He leads me to the light. When you're, while we're talking about art here, Kirk, how often you talk about leading people, telling them how important the light source is to the image being rendered?
Your eye will always go to the light, and the light of the area. That's how you know, that's why they put a white hat on a cowboy. There ain't no cowboys with white hats. That's for the audience.
Right.
You know, to go to. There's always your point of interest is generally the lightest. And oddly enough, the darkest dark is usually closest to it, because the contrast also reinforces it.
I'm a photographer, and one of the things you learn about photography is you always expose for the shadows, and you develop for the highlights. And you realize that the eye is always drawn to the sparkle, the brightest part of that image. But if your eye is drawn to the brightest spot and everything is washed out, then and there is no contrast, then there is nothing to look at. It becomes just like fog.
Yeah.
And a fog and a glare of a headlight. It's meaningless. But he's saying that calm and composed, he leads me to the light. He guides me towards the goal of enlightenment. And is that not a direct parallel to what Yahweh told us he did on behalf of Abraham?
Absolutely. Took him right up there and showed it and experienced it.
Yeah, and why did Yahweh take Abraham to the light?
Well, he didn't understand what his inheritance was, so he wanted to show him the real deal.
Okay. So if that's the case, he didn't understand what his inheritance was, and then Yahweh took him to the light, and then when Abraham came back and understood, Yahweh attributed to him to be tzedak, to be vindicated, to be righteous, to be upright, to be in good standing, to be tzedak. What does that mean?
That means when the light is upon you, as he's covered with light, then there is no darkness, so there's nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
So you're pure.
That's true.
Light is purifying.
But it also means that what we're inheriting in the covenant is to be transformed into light.
Into that person, into that being, yes. Into
empowered and enlightened by becoming energy-based, light-based, which gives us the ability to travel throughout the universe, the ability to cover, you know, distances of 16, 15 billion light years in the fraction of a second, to be anywhere at any time.
Yeah, that's a trip there.
That's a real trip there, Matt.
That's a real trip.
Yeah,
wow.
And if you know, I have a DVR on my television, and one of the things I like about a DVR is if I'm watching something and I really want to see what happened, I can go and rewind it and watch it four or five more times. And then once I have stepped away and the commercial is played, I can, you know, go back then, and once I have a little bit of accumulate, I can fast forward to the parts I don't want to see. And it makes the whole experience so much better. I can control what I see and how many times I see certain things. That's the advantage of being light. If you see something that's transformative, you can rewind and
enjoy it multiple.
Yeah, over and over again.
pitch every
it is the moments of my life, you know, some times in my life where the experience was extraordinary, but I only got to go through it once.
Yeah. JB was trying to make
over again. Yeah. So he leads us to the light. Who is the light?
Yahweh's the light.
Hi, JB. Hey. It says, that's all right. That's all right. It says, my soul, he restores and returns. Now, if he was talking about sheep, because I, his sheep, if he was talking about sheep, and if he was talking about sheep lying down in the grass where the chiggers are, if that's what in the sheep poo is, drinking the water filled with Giardia, because it's the still water, which would be the most affected, if he was talking about that kind of stuff, can your soul lie down?
No.
Can your soul eat?
No.
Can your soul drink?
Not an area drop.
So that means the fact that he transitioned here, talking about the light, that which is being led to the light is not a sheep and not his physical body and not him at this moment in time. It's his soul.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if your physical body were to come into contact with the light of God, the energy of God, what would happen to it?
It would melt.
Yeah.
You just can't be there with that.
Right.
I'm sorry, JB. Yeah. I didn't mean to step on your line.
Oh, no, you're good. I was just saying the same thing.
We'd just be incinerated. Mm-hmm. But our soul, when it's enveloped in the set-apart spirit, no problem.
It's one with the light,
One with the light.
Yeah.
So when he went to soul, he told everyone who was listening that he is talking about eternity, about the inheritance, about being part of the covenant, about the benefits of Pesach, Matzah, Bukkurim, and particularly Shavuah. But this is that transition right now between Bukkurim and Shavuah. He's being enlightened. He's being enriched.
Mm-hmm.
He's being empowered. My soul. You know, we talked about this the other day. You know, it's in the English translations, it's all restores.
Yeah.
And the reality is, it is possible to render shub restore. But do you know what the principal meaning of shub is? Restores is like five or six down the list.
Yeah.
It means to return.
Oh, yeah. Well, turn, and turn back.
To come back.
State,
right. To come back. To return. Yes, shub means to return. There's a lot of Hebrew words that convey the concept of being restored, but shub means to return.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it speaks of, you know, it's like so many Hebrew words, they have additional shading. So it speaks of the quality of the return to an extent. You know, you're returning in a very favorable circumstance. You're returning renewed, reinvigorated, reaffirmed, restored, but the renewal aspect of it. Do you know what the primary Hebrew word is? I'll bet you know this, JB. What's the primary Hebrew word for renew?
Kadash.
There you go. I knew you knew it. Kadash. It speaks of the renewed light on the moon because it's also the Hebrew word for month, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It speaks of a new month beginning when the light of the moon is being restored on the surface of the moon. So if Dode wanted to write that my soul is restored, what word, what verb would he have used?
Kadash.
Kadash. But he didn't. He used shub, didn't he?
Yeah.
So if he's using shub, we got to scratch our head and say, wait a minute, it's not right to translate this as restore and just move on to the next word. You can include restore in the definition, but the principal definition is renew. Or excuse me, is returns. So So this is my soul returns. Well, you know, we don't much know what a soul is. We know a soul is our consciousness. We can ascertain from observation that the difference between animals and plants, Yahweh says all animals have a soul and that no plants have a soul. So there is a fundamental difference between animals and plants. Both are living, right? Both grow. Mm-hmm. Both require food. Both require sources of energy to survive. Both have means of reproduction. But what is the fundamental difference between a living thing with a soul and a living thing without a soul?
It's how you relate to the environment.
You see, animals with souls all have the ability to observe what is happening around them and to respond. The gazelle can see the lion and can flee. The wolf can see the moose and lay chase. You can see the pretty girl and say, "That's my wife. I'm a lucky guy." As animals, we can see, you know, that's a rapid river there. I best not try to walk through it. We can see Yahweh's testimony and read it and then respond to it. A soul enables us to observe and respond to what we see. Now, why would that be important?
Well, you can't have a relationship without it.
Can't have any kind of relationship without it, can you?
Plants don't have relationships.
That's right. But animals do. You know, geese marry. There's no marriage ceremony, but they bond for life.
Right.
And you know, wolves hunt in packs. They live in packs. Not just hunt in packs. They live in packs. You know, most animals seek to have relationships with their animals. Fish swim in schools. Well, there are some solitary animals, but they're the exception.
Yeah, there are very few.
Yeah, humankind as an animal is so designed that when we are isolated, we go literally insane.
Yeah,
isolation is a form of torture. For humans.
Oh yeah, solitary confinement.
Yeah. So we have a soul that requires to live relationships, and it was designed to observe and respond. Gee. Let's see. Yahweh told us to observe his covenant teaching so that we could respond to what he's offering. He's given us 7 invitations to meet with him each year so we could observe the invitation and respond.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see a connection here. So my soul, that part of me that enables me to be observant and to respond, he returns. He wants to guide me when I trust him. Maybe the most powerful statement in this whole presentation, and particularly since Nuach is derived from Ruach, which is spirit, and Nuach, which is to speak in anticipation of a welcoming event. Well, the welcoming event is the Moed Mikre, and our speaking is our response where we say, "Yeah, I'm answering the invitation. Here I am."
Mm-hmm.
And so it is, and here it was written in the Jusuf mood, which is an expression of volition in the third person. It's he, speaking of Yahweh, wants to guide me when I trust him. And he's guiding us, he says, with Tzedakah. Didn't Yahweh tell us that Dod was Tzedakah, righteous?
Right.
Yeah. So how did Dod become Tzedakah?
Because he observed the Torah and he participated and responded to the choke, to the mitzvah.
Yeah, it says right here, he wants to guide me when I trust him with accurate, upright, and vindicating Tzedakah teaching throughout life. Yahweh declared Dod as Tzedakah because Dod accepted the teaching that Yahweh once wanted to share. Now, we also talked about the fact that that this not only affirms that the purpose of the Torah is to vindicate, and since Dod was a very flawed guide, the Torah's guidance and vindication is for flawed people. Fortunately, there aren't any other kind, or Yahweh could do much better than us, right? But, you know, guys, when and you probably live more less flawed lives than I do and have. And yet, from Yahweh's, yeah, I think so. But from Yahweh's perspective, it really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dode lived a more flawed life than I have by a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter. I mean,
we're
there's
all
some things that
equally perfect by him.
Yeah, we're all not only all equally perfect by him, but we are not all equal in his eyes.
No.
No.
We can all be equally perfect in his eyes, but not all be the same in his eyes. Now, there is no question, JB, that Yahweh loves Dode more than you. And lots more than me.
Can't blame him.
Don't blame him. But he does.
Yeah, shouldn't bother any of us.
You know, and he's not loving me less because he loves him more. Fact is that Yahweh is entitled. You love your wife more than any other woman you've met.
Yeah.
You have a daughter, though. You're going to love her a whole heck of a lot. It's not going to cause you to love your wife any less. So this notion that Yahweh focuses on our behavior and chooses the best behavior to people, not true.
No.
In fact, the person that was the least appropriate from a behavioral point of view because he was the most appropriate from an observation point of view and a connection and thinking point of view.
Yeah, he absolutely knew what he wanted and made sure he was on that page, and that's all he asked you to do.
Yeah, and what we talked about the other day is that the thing that there's several things that set Dode apart, and we ought to think about those when we consider what makes Yahweh pleased with an individual. And the three things I think that set Dode apart is that he was extraordinarily observant regarding the Torah. He focused on it, analyzed it, dissected the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
Second, he liked to make connections. He would say, this is true, this relates to this, and the consequence is this. I'm a beneficiary because of this and this. He made the connections, made the conclusions. Yahweh must like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing that I think sets Dode apart is that no one was better at sharing Yahweh's teaching.
Well, we're sitting here reading what he shared with us.
Correct. No one was better at sharing Yahweh's teaching than Dode. And so if Yahweh loves Dode more than anybody else, it's got to be one of those three things or a combination of those three things that really trips Yahweh's trigger. And that's important to know. I want to know what makes God happy. It's just like, you know, we always want to know what makes those we love happy.
Sure. Have to win passion, though, too, because he was a passionate guy.
He was a passionate guy, but, you know, in my view, we're we can get ourselves in a little bit of trouble with passion because Dode's passion for some mortal entanglements and for his human relational detours, that passion was counterproductive to the relationship.
Well, granted, but his desire to know Yah and everything about him, I mean, that's... Okay.
Can I change then passion, if I may, to his focus, his attitude, his ambition? He focused on what was important to Yahweh. He was enthusiastic about it. His attitude towards Yahweh was perfect.
No, that's true.
So I think maybe it's an attitudinal kind of thing. Yeah, you know he was enthusiastic. engaged, energized. I mean, you look even here at the words he's choosing. These are energized, engaged kinds of words. I think that's what God likes. I think he likes people that aren't waiting on him, but are instead engaged with him. Participants, let's go.
Yeah.
You know,
attitude is a good choice.
Talk about chutzpah. Dode said, I'm coming with the Torah, so you have to let me into heaven.
Yeah, you can't deny me.
You can't deny me. I'm coming with the Torah. You can't deny me. That doesn't upset God. You're darn right, dude. That's true.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That is for true. That's the promise I made.
You recognized it.
Yes. Yeah. That's why the Torah was always to be kept beside the Ark of the Covenant. It's the Torah that enables the promises of the Ark. It tells you how to benefit from it. So he guides me when I trust him with accurate, upright, and vindicating teaching throughout life. Magal. Mem, Ain, and then the G, which we don't see nearly as often as we see these other letters, and then the leadership of the Lamed.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you translate that?
Well, we have you're talking about Gam,
it's Mem.
Yeah, the okay.
Mem, well, Ain, and then the Gimal, which is the G, happens to be drawn as a foot walking.
Like an L.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
foot walking.
Foot walking. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And then the Lamed, which is the shepherd's staff.
Well, and the shepherd's staff is you could, I suppose you could say rather easily that is the every time I say the M, I think first to the Ruach Kodesh.
Right.
The spirit guidance, and the eyes obviously being observed, and they're looking at the person who's walking. He's looking at the person, or she's looking at the person who's walking. Is being it's being shepherded, is being led, is being part of the family walking down the path. So I mean,
yeah.
I can extrapolate all those things from it. I mean,
yeah.
You could do all those things.
So it's a cleansing and life-giving
purifying light. Yeah.
Yeah. A life-giving and purifying perspective
mm-hmm.
to walk in when led by the shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
A cleansing and life-giving perspective to walk in, led by the shepherd.
Yeah, and I always see the Gam as someone walking on that path.
Right.
You know, they were.
And
they
so,
were,
how did we translate the word? As teaching throughout life, a reasonable summation of
mm-hmm.
cleansing and life-giving perspective to walk when led by the shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
The direction in life regarding the way to live
mm-hmm.
and the path to walk, which leads to a protective encampment, is what the lexicons say. But we didn't even need to read the lexicons, did we?
No.
Just look at the letters.
Mm-hmm.
It's from a goal, which is to roll away, in the case of rolling away one's burdens and failures. And all of this is on account of his personal and proper name. So, wow. So when Yahweh met with Moshe, and Moshe said, you know, who should I tell the children of Israel has sent me to them?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, tell them I am, I exist, I am who I am. Haya, Haya. Asher, hiya. And so he's saying, you know, I am, I exist, I am who I am. Tell them that Yahweh has sent you. First name basis. It's Yahweh who sent him. And what did Yahweh achieve through Moshe?
Well, he called him out.
He liberated his people.
Liberated
from
him and
slavery.
Him
slavery in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
From he liberated his people and led them away from politics, from religion, from enslaving economic systems, and from a ruthless military. Led them away from those things to the promised land. It's just like, what are the first two conditions of the covenant?
So
walk away. Yeah, walk away from your...
Yeah, but what happened to these people? I mean, they...
Yeah,
I don't get that. I never have gotten that.
Yeah,
but it really is, when, you know, him saying this, it's the first two steps of the covenant. Walk away from your country and trust and rely on me.
Yeah, they just never got the trust part, I guess.
Yeah.
The vast majority of them.
Right. Well, I don't know.
I didn't mean to go there, but
a lot of folks and I question how it would be possible to have experienced those miracles and to be led by Yahweh as the upright pillar of fire during the night, as the pillar cloud during the day, and to see, listen to his voice, deliver his Torah, and to see Moshe's face shine as he came down the mountain, actually to experience the great fire, the light of Yahweh on the top of the mountain. How it would be possible to have witnessed the liberation events in Egypt and the drowning of the Egyptian army, the water gushing through forth from the stone, the elimination of those who chose to go back and worship Baal, the golden calf, the Lord. And how, under those circumstances, it would be possible to reject Yahweh. I don't wonder at all. Now, why would I not? Why am I not surprised? And in fact, I would go so far as to say, I think that they had it much more difficult circumstance than we do today.
We have much more at our disposal.
That's correct.
Even more people today still reject him.
Yes.
By far, a larger portion of the world today rejects him than the portion of Israelites who rejected him at that time.
The majority of Israelites, they were not educated. They were slaves. They were illiterate. Yahweh communicated his Torah with his voice once, but they couldn't read it from that point on. They had to have it read to them. And Moshe did, but I had to have it read to them. Our retention ability and our analytical ability, when we can recite the words and then with our eyes read the words, and if you're like me, write down the words as you're thinking about them, and you get to engage in each of these words in all of those different ways, and then you can explore all the nuances and meanings and etymology of each of these words, I think it puts us in a vastly better situation in terms of coming to know and seeing Yahweh.
No, I understand it intellectually. I just to be a slave in Egypt or just be a slave anywhere and then you're set free should have done it.
People have a tough time with freedom.
Their entire life in slavery, freedom's a tough concept to grasp.
Well, yeah,
I was in the USSR right at the time that they were beginning to experience the first freedom, and then I saw pictures of it and went to Iron Curtain countries immediately after they're given freedom. They were absolutely adrift. They had no idea. You know, they'd go into a store and have a choice of four different brands of toothpaste, and they were just paralyzed. Everything in life was paralyzing. And they would yearn for the days when they didn't have to make these choices. So while I love freedom and I hate authority being imposed, that's not the same for everybody. You can be conditioned to be uncomfortable with freedom. So there are inmates who spend long periods of time in jail who become accustomed. Yeah, they want to go back. They function better in that environment. So there are people like that. But, you know, also, I don't find Yahweh imposing at all or threatening at all when I read his testimony. You know, if, flawed as I am, if I were there in his presence, and you're saying, oh, my goodness, look at me, and there's God right there watching everything I'm doing. That would be a little disconcerting. I'd be a little uncomfortable. Yeah, I'm just not good enough to live like that. And, you know, I can read the words, and I can be comfortable knowing him without feeling so vulnerable. You know, if I get something wrong, which I do often, I've got time to go back and to think about it and to grow and change and return to the truth once. And if you're in Yahweh's presence, you know, sometimes you don't have that opportunity. You know, you make a mistake with the golden calf, man, it's over. Because, you know, he's not going to tolerate that kind of stuff in his presence. So
that's a big mistake, though.
Yeah, well, that's a big mistake. Yeah, it's a big mistake. I've done a lot of dumb stuff. That's not one of them. I have no golden calves here. So I think we really do have an advantage over them. And the other thing that we have, too, is they, Yahweh promised he was going to take care of them, but, man, it was 40 years in the wilderness, and, you know, and it was a tough go there for a while. And it's a different story for us because we have seen Yahweh make promise after promise after promise and consistently deliver. Mm-hmm. And so while they were out there wondering, okay, is he going to deliver again, we're not wondering. He's delivered on every promise. It's for us. It's
he's got a good track record at this point.
He's got a really good track record, yeah. A really good track record. Okay, even though I actually walk on an ongoing basis in a valley, in a depression of the shadow of distress, of darkness and death and dissipation of all light, I will neither fear nor respect the miserable, distressing, and destructive and violent nature of evil. So here we're forced by these words to realize that he's not talking about a sheep being protected from the wolves.
No.
First of all, he's talking about a soul, and second of all, it's impossible to ascribe evil to to any kind of a threatening animal. Yeah, a shark's not evil when it eats. They're not evil. They may be scary, but they're not evil. And so we have to say, okay, what would be darkness and that leads to dissipation? What causes distress in our world? What is the cause of death in our world?
Yeah, well, we know where he's going there. We talked about it this morning as politics and religion, military, economic. Babble, yeah. I just babble. The whole
babble.
Concept.
All things babble. All the things they experience in Egypt and the crucible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's those things. Militaries kill. Countries and their governments, they retaliate. You know, our response to the Islamic State showing videos purporting to show them killing two American journalists is to respond by bombing them to the point that we claim we've killed 10,000 of them. So we think that we've done a good thing by responding to them killing two journalists by bombing and killing 10,000 of them.
As if that makes a difference.
Wow.
To them, it makes no difference.
But just think about the killing machine that is our military and our politicians that have put our military in the position to exercise this horrible scourge of death. You know, we blacken the skies. We blot out the light. He's talking about militaries and politicians and governments and religions.
They don't even care. I mean, I don't listen to the congressmen and things hardly ever because they just so turn me off with their lies and it's so obvious they're lying about things. But sometimes the other day I was listening to these guys who we need to do this and this and that. They're so callous. They don't care that that's a human being or there's thousands of human beings that you're killing yourself when you kill that. They just become mass murderers, and they don't equate that with the, let's just say, the trials at Nuremberg where you're pointing at people for mass murder. Well, what the heck are you think you're doing?
Right. Exactly. You know, when we're bemoaning the Islamic State because they sexually abuse little girls, and yet our CIA sexually abused prisoners.
It's just so sick, it's unbelievable.
It's just so sick, it's unbelievable. You're right. And so when he's talking about that which is raw, this is the Rosh, which is the head of man, and the eye.
Mm-hmm.
So man's perspective, his the perspective from which he reacts and responds to the world is evil.
Is evil. Wicked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the antithesis of good. It's that which is improper and hinders, undesirable and injurious, disagreeable and malignant, noisome and grievous, saddening and unpleasant. from ra'ah, meaning displeasing and hurtful, sad, shattering relationships, and turning them asunder. And that's religion. Hard to come up with anything that would be other than religion in that context.
Yeah.
And so while this whole presentation has been about the benefits of being part of the covenant, now you might say, okay, well, the fact that he's talking about walking through a depressing realm of religion and politics, well, that's the here and now, so doesn't that tear asunder your perspective that this is the fulfillment of Shavuah? And here's that was my first response. I said maybe we ought to consider this. But one of the things that concerns those who I think are new to the covenant, which is, you know, what if I screw up? What if I forget to observe Shavuah? Have I lost it all? What if I, do something that is inappropriate? What if I make a mistake? You know, can I lose my salvation? Can I lose the enrichment and empowerment that I have been given? What he's saying here is that he's surrounded by human influences, religious and political and military influences that are corrupting. He's surrounded by them, that it's depressing, just as we are today.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, nah, I don't respect them. I don't fear them. I'm not bothered in the least by them. So he's saying, you know, don't stress over them. Dode is acknowledging them, as we do, but he's not afraid of them. By the same token, though, he's not respecting them, which means he's not a patriot here. You know, the Star of David as the symbol of Israel, David did not have a star. First, his name wasn't David, and second, he did not have a star. And there is no Star of David. There's nothing remotely akin to David that would be a star. And he was not political. Yes, he became the leader of Israel because of his relationship with Yahweh. But he wasn't political.
But he's not really a king. He's a shepherd. His heart is a shepherd, a leader, a protector of his people. That's a whole other concept. So.
Yep. Willing to engage to protect his people. So he says that surely you are with me. So the reason that the Islamic State has become very, very influential now in America. And they are targeting individuals like myself. You know, Pamela Geller was the target of the two guys that were just killed in Boston. They wanted to go and behead her. The fellow that is, Gert Wilder, the fellow that equates Muhammad with Hitler, correctly so, and in Denmark, I believe, or Norway, I think it's Denmark. The two Muslims from the Islamic State went with automatic weapons to kill him. And so those who speak truthfully about Muhammad and truthfully about Islam and expose and condemn the religion for the criminal enterprise that it is are now being targeted by the Islamic State, which is growing in presence and zeal and passion here in America, to the point where Muslims that wouldn't previously act now think that the only way they can be a Muslim is to go kill someone like myself. This would be a time that you would think you would cower in fear, because there could be nothing more lightless, darker, more deadly than a fundamentalist Muslim. And yet, I'm not afraid. Why? Because Yah was with me. And he's not with me because of who I am.
No.
He is with me because I chose to observe and respond to him.
Mm-hmm.
I became part of his family. When you become part of his family, the shepherd idea is that he pays attention to you, watches over you, he protects you just like a shepherd does. When you become his kid, he is responsible for you. if Yahweh is responsible for me, because he is responsible for me, why would I be concerned by an idiot with a with an automatic weapon? What does an idiot with an AK-47 have over Yahweh?
Nothing. Less than nothing.
Yeah, less than nothing. I mean, we're not talking about the weight of navel length. It's not even chaff. You are with me. Your rod for smiting foes and your shepherd's staff for supporting and assisting, they comfort me. You know, there was a story, JB, you're down there in Texas, of a man who was in the midst of a party, and his six or nine-year-old daughter, went into the barn to feed one of the dad's horses. And while in the barn, one of the employees raped her. And the father was looking for her, heard her scream, saw the man raping her, and he took a blunt object, a stick of a board of some sort, and he killed the man. Now, he wasn't tried. He wasn't indicted. He wasn't tried. And fathers will use weapons to protect their children. It's unlikely that I'm going to pick up a weapon to protect myself. I will pick up a weapon to protect my wife or my sons. Wouldn't think a second about using it.
Heartbeat.
Yeah, not even a heartbeat. And so what Yahweh is willing to do, Yahweh refers to his malach, his spiritual envoys, as Shaba. And Shaba means they're a control regimen, a command and control regimen that obeys, if you will, like someone in the military. We're not a malach because we're not under the auspices of obedience. But his messengers obey. They're told what to do. They do what they're told. And they act just as an organized command and control structure, just like a military. And so if Yahweh wants to stop you from doing something, like, for example, what did he do when the Egyptians were chasing after his children?
Wiped them out.
Yeah, drowned them all. What's Yahweh going to do when the flood of Muslims come into Israel to destroy Israel during the Magog War?
And turn them into mincemeat.
Yeah, and then he's going to incinerate them in the Battle of Armageddon. Just literally incinerate them, turn them into goo. So Yahweh will engage in a violent way when violence is called for to protect his children. You know, that's why he says don't make a habit of killing, but Yahweh has killed. What did Yahweh do when the only eight people that were part of his family were threatened by the violence surrounding them?
Yeah,
he didn't just save his children, did he?
No.
He eliminated the threat. So it's something to think about. Yahweh is doing what loving fathers do. They protect their children. I'm not a killer. I don't want to see an animal suffer. But in my home, if there is a rat that is capable of carrying disease and is defecating all over places like that would foster disease, in my house, if there is a copperhead or if there is a black widow, a brown recluse, I'm going to kill it.
Oh yeah, that's no sweat there.
Yeah, I'm going to kill it. Absolutely, unequivocally, every time. Never going to think about it. I'm going to kill it. And so Yahweh has a club, and he will use that club. And it talks about the shepherd's staff and this club. It's two different things. The shepherd's staff is to rescue and to lead and to use as a walking stick. To designate, who the leader is here and enable the leader. But, man, it talks about he's got a club here, too. And we ought not think of God strictly as this lovey-dovey, loves all the little children, always open arms, never going to harm a flea. No.
That ain't Yahweh.
That ain't Yahweh. No.
I love the Hezekiah story. I mean, it's just, these people were no good. I mean, they were, and they just got it all of a sudden at the last minute, at the 11th hour.
Yes.
I mean, and then they responded correctly, and then it's over, and the greatest army in the world at the time. It's just wiped out.
Did he simply provide protection for his children, or did he use a rod for smiting their foes?
He wiped them.
185,000 of them, right?
Mm-hmm. That's not a small number.
That's not a small number. Your rod for smiting foes and your shepherd's staff for supporting and assisting that comfort me. Yeah, I like the fact that Yahweh was powerful. I like the fact that I know that Yahweh was going to protect me. And I know that he has the power and the will to do so. Yeah, I'm very comforted by that. I think we all are.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dode is saying a lot of stuff here. I mean, he's saying that once we become part of his family, we're protected. Once we become part of his family, Yahweh's not going to allow any harm to come to us. Now, that doesn't mean that we aren't going to die.
No.
A physical death. That doesn't mean that, you know, there's some times where the knees hurt and the back's, you know, Larry got a bad back tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Hope he feels better. But, you know, doesn't mean that we're not going to have issues along the way. It's just that when it comes to making certain that his children are protected, Yahweh does what he's promised to do. You can rely on it. There's no reason you should ever be afraid, because they really can't take anything from you that's important. So the shepherd staff for supporting assistance, they comfort me. This is Nakam. Rakam, with the R, means to enrich and to be merciful. So Nakam, with the N, is to console, to cause us to reconsider and change our thinking regarding mercy and compassion. And, of course, the only difference between Rakam and Nakam is Rakam is the observant individual, mm-hmm. where Nakam is the child born with an inheritance.
An inheritance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our inheritance is to have Yahweh change our thinking regarding his means to mercy. That's what Nakam means. You arrange before me, or you arrange before my presence, mm-hmm. a table to dispatch in direct and open opposition and for the purpose of exposing my adversaries. Now, that's really an interesting perspective. It's too bad Larry's not with us. He would love that. You arrange before my presence a table to dispatch in direct and open opposition and for the purpose of exposing my adversaries. You know, if you're out in a situation, either of you guys, and somebody is being overtly hostile and critical to you, they're being adverse to one of Yahweh's children. Somebody is threatening you. They're threatening the child of God. God wants us to be able to respond. He enables our response. So this is you arrange. You prepare and set in place. You establish a pattern for a particular task and for the stated purpose expressly to care for and tend to, enable in order to furnish. So God is giving us not only what is required, he himself is demonstrating how to respond. And this table right before us, we're not talking about, you know, this is, we don't have to go run and hide into a cave. This isn't, we duck out of harm's way. Right before us, face to face, he is preparing a table. What do you lay on a flat surface?
Objects.
Yeah, like how about the word of Yahweh?
Mm-hmm. That'll work.
Yep. It's a presentation, a table to present information. So now if you're on the table, now do you have to be on your knees to read it?
No.
No, it's right there.
Nope.
You can stand up and you can read it. It's right there on the table. You want to see it? It's right there opened up on the table. And he says, in direct and open opposition for the purpose of exposing, this is Neged, straight ahead, directly and conspicuously confronting, deliberately deploying an open position in a public space in direct opposition, face-to-face. Face-to-face. What about that turning the other cheek thing?
I think it went out the window. No, it's not.
What about we should all be accepting and respectful?
No, not again. Not when they're against Yahweh's word.
What about this idea that we criticize in private and praise in public?
Well, I don't hear that one.
No, this is exactly the opposite. This is in an open debate, right there in public view, face-to-face, directly. Take advantage of what Yahweh has prepared and set upon this table for you to confront your foes.
You mean like shattering myths?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. What he's saying is that Yahweh has made it possible, arranged everything we need, and set it before us so that we can stand up and expose and condemn our adversaries.
Mm-hmm.
And he, concept of Arak, he has also said that he himself has provided the example we can follow. What did Yosha do when he confronted the religious and political leaders of Israel? What does it say in Matanyah 23?
Well, he condemned them face to face. He turned over the tables in the temple. He quoted Torah right in front of them. So he was quite aggressive.
Right.
Public.
Exposing them in public. Right.
Humiliating.
Exposing and condemning them. Mm-hmm. That's what he did. That's the example he set. That's what he wants us to do. Don't back down.
Yeah.
Don't turn away. Don't get along. Don't ever be seen with a coexist bumper sticker on your behind.
I hate those things. Yeah,
and just the fact that it's on their behind ought to tell you everything you need to know. Yeah, I always said, don't do this from your behind. He didn't say, I'm going to prepare something for your back. No. Yahweh has arranged this table for us. He's provided the testimony in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. He's given us all these wonderful Psalms from Dod as to how to respond. He's prepared the table. He set the table. And he wants us to engage, to capitalize on it. Don't back down.
Look at all the tables he set before you in the last 10 years. My gosh, opportunity. What a pleasure.
For all of us, what a pleasure.
Well, I know. It's just, I just think of, my gosh, all those radio shows, all those opportunities to speak out. Wow.
And the thing that was so amazing about the whole thing, it was done exactly this way. He arranged it. He prepared.
Yeah.
I didn't start doing this before I had invested the time to learn. And even the materials to learn, he provided.
Mm-hmm.
He set the example. He provided the materials. He set up the table. And it was becoming prepared based upon him enabling me and now all of us to understand. He has walked the walk, talked the talk, and all we have to do is follow his example and recite what he said, just as we're doing right now.
Right.
But he doesn't want wallflowers, man. What was another thing about Dod? Dod's the person he loves most. Was Dod a wallflower? Was Dod an all-accepting guy that just loved everyone? Or is Dod the guy that says, in your face?
Yeah, I think so.
I got enemies and men. I don't back down. Face-to-face, man, I bow my back. I look them in the eye. I expose them and condemn them. Well, that's the example. Yeah, well, once, when I first started this, and because I was so judgmental mm-hmm. with the Prophet of Doom, that I was constantly told, you know, you really ought to, you know, act like Jesus. Jesus
Tone
would never
down.
Have exposed and condemned people the way you are. He would have never been so demeaning and pejorative.
I never would have seen that.
What are you reading?
Yeah, I mean, as a Christian, I knew better than that.
What are you reading, man? Yahweh, and Yahusha is just a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. Yahweh isn't that way either.
Yeah.
God's in your face. I mean, a third of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms is Yahweh exposing and condemning people publicly and their behavior, and usually organizational behavior. It's sometimes it's an individual's behavior, but it's usually organizational behavior,
mm-hmm.
institutionalized behavior. It's what he does. It's what we should do. He then says, "My head, my Rosh, you nourish and satisfy with the olive oil." Okay, wait a minute now. He just said that he has arranged and set the example and put whatever prepared us by what he has established on this table so that face-to-face in a public setting we can expose and condemn our adversaries. And the next line is, "My head, you nourish and satisfy." Now, I know that the English Bible says, "My head, you anoint."
Mm-hmm.
But what's the Hebrew word for anoint? Masayach?
Oh, Masayach, yeah.
Masayach? Yeah. Masayach? Is that a Hebrew word for anoint? Masayach. So he didn't use Masayach, he used Ashen. Masayach is the Hebrew word for anoint. Now, if you actually study Masayach, because it's used primarily as an adjective, and you look at all of its roots and its etymology as an adjective, and the context that it is modifying a messenger, what you find mm-hmm. is Masayach actually means, and the same thing that anoint should mean, which is
now,
to set apart and prepare to serve.
Did he use that when he's talking about Samuel anointing Dode?
Masayach.
He would have used it there. But here it still means you anoint, but it's to
Now it's Dashen.
Mm-hmm.
So what does Dashen mean?
Dashen.
Well, we know that Dashen is used synonymously with Torah, with
mm-hmm.
Mitzvot, and with Choke.
Mm-hmm.
So it's teaching us regarding the means to resolve disputes, to exercise good judgment that was cut into stone, that was established in writing, that cuts us into the relationship. Okay? So let's play with this word a bit. So it's my head, which is Rosh.
Mm-hmm.
That's the R, the Aleph, and the Shin. So my head, it's... Isn't the first letter of Rosh head
mm-hmm.
the head?
The head. Yeah. Oh yeah, the Rosh
so
is the head.
Isn't the letter Rosh mean
mm-hmm.
head?
Yes.
So how would you claim that these pictorial depictions of these letters don't mean what we're saying they mean when the definition of the letter is the picture? Okay, so it's Rosh, and then so it's my head, and then it's the Aleph, and then the
authority, power.
Yeah. So he's observing the Lamb of God, the Lamb of God, and the Word of God,
and the Word of God.
Yeah.
The Lamb's Word. Yeah.
Yeah. So observing the Lamb of God's word, that which is foremost and utmost, that which is beginning and initiating the process, you nourish and satisfy. Now, how do we get that? Okay, Dashen, to anoint in olive oil, a metaphor for the set-apart spirit's ability to enlighten us, to heal us, to envelop us, and to nourish us. covering in preparation for a festival feast designed to cleanse and deliberate, facilitating growth, sprouting out, and shooting forth. You provide the choicest and most nourishing, richest and most satisfying, and delightful food to consume, in the sense, words to grow by. You facilitate vigorous health, abundant prosperity, tremendous new growth, and total freedom, complete satisfaction, and a stalwart attitude. All definitions of this word, of dasha. Opening up, and now he's going to say with the olive oil. So its peel stem reveals that Yahweh is doing this on behalf of Dod, empowering him in this way, while the perfect conjugation indicates that the action was complete, lacking nothing, and that this only had to be done once. Now, dashin is often written as dash, D-A-T-H, dath, and when it's written as dath, it is used interchangeably with Torah, Mitzvot, and Chok.
D-A-T-H, and then it's
right.
Torah and Chok, okay.
Yeah. The dashin is delet shen nun. What can you figure
that's
out?
That's what I have, yeah. Yeah,
delet shen nun. Delet is?
Yeah, the old meaning was to make something fat, to increase, to enlarge, to be satisfied, that sort of thing. So.
Yeah. So, but if you just talk about fat,
yeah, I know it's
today's
too
connotation.
Too just earthy. That
yeah,
that
we look at fat forward. Today and we think you use the English word fat. That
negative
means
term.
Not a
yeah.
Negative
term.
Term,
but
that means to grow, to some
enlarge.
You know, in the ancient world. Food was so scarce and life was so hard that very few people had an ounce of fat on them. The only people that have any fat on them are those people that lived in abundance, whose life was relatively easy, who were in a position where food and nourishment were plentiful, where the amount of work they had to exert to derive proper nourishment was minimal, where the quality of the food they had access to was exceptional. So that was what it conveyed then. It conveys a very different thing now. So I don't like to use fat.
Yeah, well, no, I agree with you. But
it meant something very different then than it means now.
Mm-hmm.
So it says here that, you know, he's preparing this table, and the next thing he says is you nourish and satisfy with olive oil. And my head, you nourish and satisfy with olive oil. Well, the olive oil is the source of enlightenment, the source of nourishment, the source of cleansing that is synonymous with the set-apart spirit. So how does Yahweh prepare us?
With the set-apart spirit.
And where is that table?
That table, is it the Passover?
Head.
I mean, it's the
table
more
that he is setting before us is in our head.
Oh, okay. Yes.
We're learning. We're learning. We're becoming prepared mentally based upon what we learn. The table that that Yahweh has enabled, that he lays out his teachings so that we can respond to our adversaries is in our head. That's what he just said.
That's why I said in my head.
It's our head that he is enlightening.
Well, I'm a little slow sometimes, but I'll get there.
Yeah, it's our head that he is enlightening. And then he says, my portion, speaking of Kosh, is a receptacle and a vessel, speaking of the soul metaphorically. Is a container or cup of wine to be passed around and shared. So, wine is the symbol of the blood of the sacrificial lamb of Pesach, and so he's enlightening the soul, which is the whole concept of matzah, and the wine is the portion. Is the symbolism of Pesach. He's receiving those benefits.
Why it has the? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, is that why the Shemekah is there? The word is written that way with a kaf and a, and then ends with a shemek.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff the kind of holding the contents. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly brings you there. I just, I don't think that's a coincidence by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. And in this particular case, according to Dodd, this portion of that's in this container or cup of wine to be passed around and shared abundantly overflows with Yah's spirit. Now, how in the world do we get Yah's spirit? Abundantly overflows with Yah's spirit because the word is Ruah-Yah.
Ruah-Yah.
So Ruach is Yahweh, is the set-apart spirit, right? Ruach is the set-apart spirit, and Yah is the familiar form of Yahweh, so it's Ruah-Yah. So he says, my portion, a container of wine to be passed around and shared, abundantly overflows with Yah's spirit.
Yeah. Ruah-Yah. That's exactly that's what I have. Gosh.
Ruah-Yah.
If I'd read it, I'd know what you said.
Yeah.
I had it written down, too. That was in my nose, too, so that's good.
Yep. Indeed, only. This is Ach, emphasizing the point and making a contrast. That which is generous and good, beneficial and beautiful, Tob, and that which is loyal and unfailing, loving and fortuitous in its benefits, shall genuinely and always intensely pursue me. Everywhere and always, all of the days of my life, and I shall return and be completely restored in the home and family of Yahweh. Elongated and prolonged are my days. Wow. Okay, so he is, his head is being enlightened.
Mm-hmm.
It's being immersed in a covering of the set-apart spirit. It's being nourished and satisfied. And he is receiving a portion of a cup filled with wine that is to be passed around and shared that abundantly overflows with Yah's spirit. And he transitions from there, indeed, that which is generous and good, beneficial and beautiful, Toba. Pleasing and festive, prosperous and proper, desirable and joyous, better than what is deserved, while performing as promised and expected. Well, that's a pretty good thing. If you're going to have something follow you forever, how about pleasing and festive, prosperous and proper, desirable and joyous? Sounds like eternity is going to be fun. This is forever and ever now. Eternity is going to be good. Beneficial and beautiful. That's what he's talking about. So he's giving us a glimpse for all eternity that he's going to experience, and therefore we're going to experience that which is generous and good, beneficial and beautiful, pleasing and festive, prosperous and proper, desirable and joyous, better than what's deserved, performing as promised and expected, and loyal, unfailing love and fortuitous benefits. Chesed, kindness, affection, a glorious appearance, undeserved favor and mercy, a devoted and good relationship, shall always genuinely and intensely pursue me everywhere and always during all of the days of my life. Well, he began this by saying he's not going to be diminished. So how long are all of the days of his life?
Eternal, forever and ever, olam.
Yeah.
So
for all eternity, he's going to be
growing.
He's going to receive benefits and have a glorious appearance. Going to receive Yahweh's affection in a beneficial relationship, and going to experience the things that are good and beneficial and beautiful, pleasing and festive. No matter where he goes, always, without end. You know what's interesting, too, here? It says, everywhere and all and always, all the days of my life. You know what the Hebrew word for day is? Yom.
Yom.
Day
mm-hmm.
is the yomim. Do you know what the actual meaning of yom is?
beyond the just the cycle of a day. I mean,
No, it's actually it was chosen to represent day because of what the meaning of the word is. The meaning of the word is to be in direct light and to be energetic and warm. It means to be so warm is to be hot, and to be in unabated light.
Huh.
So what he's experiencing here is when we become light, it's Yom. And all energy, you know, radiant energy gives off heat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's alive. It's warm. You know, it's hot. You know, you talked about Dode being passionate. Yeah, he's
passionate.
Hot.
This is it.
Yeah, this is it, man. So he chose a word rather than just saying, you know, forever and ever, Olam, Olam.
Yeah, I know. That's probably.
He chose twice here, Yomem, days, because days convey what he's going to be like, what we're going to be like. Enlightened, brilliant, light, energetic, warm.
Yeah.
All the days. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, when you're a kid, you can't wait. You know, especially when it's summertime, you can't wait to get up and sun comes up and you're out the door. And we used to go play
yeah.
and go on all dadgum day.
All day. And when it came to be night, then, you know, your day was over. You had to come in.
Yeah.
So he's telling us that all of the benefits of the covenant, all of the beauty of being God's kid, all the things that are pleasing and festive about attending his Moed Mikre, all of the prosperous and desirable benefits of the covenant that Yahweh has promised, they're going to always genuinely and intensely pursue me. This Radap speaks about that which is active, considerable effort being put in. This is not passive stuff. This is God saying, I'm going to give it to you, and I'm going to give it to you abundantly. You know, I don't care where you go or what you're doing. I'm going to be with you every step. I'm going to pursue you no matter where you are. You're mine. I'm devoted to energizing you. And I'm going to energize you with things that are good, generous, beneficial, beautiful, pleasing, festive, prosperous, proper, desirable, joyous, kind, generous, merciful, and devoted to a pleasing relationship. So
what a promise.
God's pursuing us. You know, you don't have to go to God and say, oh, God, please love me. God is pursuing us.
Yeah.
You know how much when you're in a relationship and you're being pursued, how much more fun that is than having to be the one that is pursuing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's unrequited love. You know, Paul writes, love does not seek its own. Bull crap.
Well, yeah.
Man, I tell you what. There's some girls that I had the hots for that didn't have the any interest in me. Man, that is really an empty feeling. That's horrible, man. Talk about the hurt and the void in one's life when you reach out and you pursue a girl that has no interest in you when you're you know in your dating years and how empty and hollow and painful that is. Well, Yahweh was saying, no, I'm pursuing you. I'm pursuing you. Because Yahweh wants us to respond and be passionate about what he's doing and to engage enthusiastically. You know, before it just said that Yahweh set the example of how he was going to prepare us and how we're supposed to respond to our enemies. Well, he's telling us here the same thing. He's actively engaged.
I have to tell you, I'm sitting here just looking over these pages of notes that we've been talking about, and plus your translation is now written, and I'm going, I'm just thinking how far from a week ago, I'm just blown away by this. I mean, sometimes If I'm going quiet, it's because I'm really sitting here going, trying to soak it all in. Because I'm used to taking notes when you're throwing out little extras. On the side here, I'm just going, this is just mind-boggling how beautiful this is.
Yeah, this is abundant life.
Yeah,
this is joyous life. This is festive life. This is being with a God that likes to party, a God that likes to have fun, a God that likes to engage and to pursue and to be active and to exert effort. This is not a God that's going to sit there on his throne and say, you come to me.
There's nothing negative about this. There's nothing you're leaving behind. It's better than this. There's nothing. I can't make everybody want to go with me, but I can.
No.
You know, it's.
Can you imagine though? We're in eternity, the three of us want to go off, and we want to not only visit another galaxy and a planet that's in that galaxy, but we've imagined creating an environment there that we just think would be really cool to see how it all develops. And so we're off, and we're going to do that. And we don't even have to ask Yahweh if he wants to participate, if he wants to go with us. He's right there saying, yeah, but I want to go with you. Yeah, absolutely, let's go.
that's got a blunt mind.
Let's go, man, I'm ready.
That's kind of mind-blowing. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Man, I've got my jets on. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
does JB play golf, just in case?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so, and I hope that I hit it long and far and straight.
Well, you need
I
to
hit it long and
there's
straight.
No challenge if you hit them all straight, and the golf courses are designed to be crooked. You need to curve them around a tree here and there.
Okay. Shape the ball, man. Yeah. So we are back to an absolute affirmation that Dode is talking about eternity. Did Dode survive his physical, mortal life?
I'm afraid not.
I'm afraid
and
not.
He didn't want to. He didn't want to. He wanted to move on.
So are we talking about sheep?
We're not talking about sheep. We ain't talking about green grass.
So we're talking about the benefits here now. We've probably moved all the way through Teruah to Kippurim to Sukkah. Because what is Teruah? Isn't Teruah having us prepared to expose
for the,
foes and to witness the truth? Isn't that Teruah? Didn't he just prepare us for Teruah?
Absolutely.
And didn't he just say that our heads he's anointing, he's covering, he's surrounding in olive oil, the set-apart spirit, to make us heal us, to make us look perfect, to enlighten us, which reconciles the relationship? And now what's he doing? Isn't he camping out with God? Actively camping out. We're not sitting around the throne. God's not just sitting there on the throne and we're coming to him. We're going off and doing this kind of stuff, and he's actively pursuing us wherever we're going.
That's such a different concept from some. You have to remember all those years in Christianity.
Oh, I know. Yeah, seeing God
sit on the throne and play your harp or whatever they told you
you're
going
to
be
God
doing.
On his throne. And here's God saying, not only am I actively pursuing you and accompanying you, but I'm accompanying you with stuff that I've got this bag of stuff, Tob and Chesed, that's enlightening, that's enriching, that's fun, that's festive, that's joyous, that's beneficial, that's pleasing, that's loving, that shows my affection for you. I got that. That's what I'm coming with, man. Okay.
Wow.
How much more fun is that than watching God sit on a throne and us blowing smoke at him?
Yeah.
God, you're just so cool, man. I'm just so glad I'm here. Versus, let's go off and explore. And God said, yeah, man, let's go off and do that. I'll bring a whole bag of stuff that's going to be really fun.
That was kind of a little turnaround when you started in the first part when we were talking about want. And it's not only not being denied or not having, it's not just a negative, but it's not a neutral. You know, we were talking about it's not a neutral. It's also just the opposite. You're growing exponentially, and you're just enjoying exponentially. Everything is exponential.
Okay, so as we're going off, Kirk, and and we're off and exploring, and God's right there with us. We talked about the pace of eternity,
right?
And I shall return and be completely restored in the home and family of Yahweh. Elongated and prolonged my days. Elongated and prolonged. So after we go off and we go explore the universe, what are we going to come do? Come back.
We're going to enjoy and talk about it and relive it. And around the fire.
Sure. Right.
Absolutely.
In the home of Yahweh, in the family of Yahweh, with the covenant. How can you miss this stuff? He's not talking about a pasture here. He's not talking about the soft grass. Or the green grass. I'm talking about going off and actively exploring the universe and then coming back home as part of his family. Forever. Ever.
JB, I've been living with this for about a week or more, and does anything in this translation throw you or sound out of context with the words? I mean, you know more about these words than I do, but I've been digging them and digging and digging, and that's really what they say.
I haven't had a chance to look too deep into the translation, but everything seems very consistent with what I know of Yahweh, so.
Yeah, so context, I don't think you're taking any liberties here. You just, I'm just dumbfounded that it's taken so many thousands of years to somebody to say it. I'm sure people understood it when Doe wrote it. I mean,
they understood
the language better than we'll ever know. But
I actually think I am taking liberties, and I want to take liberty now in a positive term. Liberty is the antithesis of being confined, right? If you're free, you're liberated.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that Yahweh enables is a liberation of his children, the freedom to think. The freedom to explore, the freedom to observe and to respond and to make the kind of connections that lead to conclusions. Now, you meant that I didn't take liberties and... I didn't remove a word. I didn't change a word. I didn't ignore a word. I didn't add any words. I'm not taking a liberal view of the text. I'm taking a very fundamentalist, a very literal view of the text, but I'm doing a lot of extrapolating. Because extrapolating, I think, is the fun of the whole thing. It's okay. What does this word mean? What are its connotations? How do those connotations apply? What are its shadings? Why was Shub used and not some other word? You know, why was it Shub instead of Kadash in terms of if he really wanted to say restore as opposed to return? This is returning home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why if God wanted to say that, you know, we were anointed, why didn't he use Mathiach instead of Dashan? Which means, you know, to be nourished, to be enriched, to be made stalwart, to be liberated, you know, to receive every possible thing that is nourishing and that helps us grow. Now, why take a word that speaks of growth, Dashan?
Unlimited, you know. Well, and, I don't think you're, you know, exactly.
If he wanted to speak about anointing, he would have used Mashiach, which means preparing to set apart to serve, but he used Dashen, which its primary definition is about growing, being nurtured, abundant life. So I think we are extrapolating from the words. I think that's why we were given an Asalma.
But you're not off course at all. You're not wavering.
They're all totally
acceptable in the context of how they're used. So
I would say that that some of the words that I took the biggest, I don't know say that the largest leap from the common translation, if there was one, it would be the word that we analyzed as what do the letters say, and I said it was a path through life, and so it was. Is the teaching that Yahweh provides in this path that we are walking through through life. That was the definition I chose for the word. And then we considered the letters, which this is Magal. It's teaching throughout life. And you have water, the source of life. And then Ain, the that perspective that we would have in our life. Followed by the G, which is the footstep or the path that we walk, as guided by the Lebed shepherd.
Right.
So the direction in life regarding the way to live and the path to walk, which leads to being properly guided. So that's what the letters could say.
Yeah. And but we even can reduce Torah down to, you know, teaching that points you on the path and the way to live or to life.
Yes.
So that's exactly what that is. So that's
right.
Nothing out of context there. Nothing that's twisted meaning. There's nothing. It's
Now, and also, think about this. Since Nash and Dath is used synonymously with Torah throughout the Torah prophets and Psalms, and the word's primary meaning is to grow, to flourish, then isn't the product of the Torah's guidance growth?
Growth, absolutely. Well, what do you do when you get taught?
Right, growth.
You have more knowledge than you did when you weren't taught.
Growth. You know, when we talked about Tadashin and the fact that that today we consider fat bad, but if you're growing fat versus you're growing thin, you're does fat mean that you're growing?
Sure.
It's enlarging.
You're enlarged. You're enlarging.
Yeah, becoming fatter. If you know, if you have a wad of money that's becoming fatter as opposed to thinner, your wealth is growing. So he's using this term as and the Dashan is to grow in the sense of expanding. So
yeah,
our growth that is exponential, expanding growth, constant growth. You know, we've talked about this before. If Yahweh wasn't growing, he'd be dying.
Yeah, I used to say that about a business, like our business, if we stop growing, then you kind of plateau and then you start going to rears.
Right.
That's what, you know, it has to be reinvented almost.
A tree that stops growing dies.
Mm-hmm.
A life that stops growing decays.
Mm-hmm.
The moment, you know, when we're children, when we're growing, we're adding to what we are. But when we stop growing, at that point, we begin to decay. It's the nature of life. If you stop growing, you're decaying. And if Yahweh stopped growing, he would devolve. And so what is the only way that a God who is infinite in power can grow?
Yeah, there's nothing you can add to himself you haven't already got, so except for relationships that mean something.
Okay. Now, I left it right there. That was good enough. That's the reason we exist, to form relationships that are meaningful to Yahweh. Because just like our children and our family and our wives and husbands, we grow through those relationships. But I think here we have something, an added element to that. We also grow, you and I grow, when we learn something, when we observe something, when we see something for the first time and enjoy it and benefit from it. Yahweh is going to grow by experiencing aspects of what he has created and watching us create and conceive.
You know, I hadn't thought about that, but that's absolutely, you know, that's quite interesting, because if you go out and build something, If I'm a major builder and then I teach you to build things or paint or whatever, and you go out and do these things, what a joy to see, oh, wow, I wouldn't have thought of that. Or maybe if I would have, if I thought hard enough. But the fact is, you went out and did it. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Exactly. And so he's not only gets to observe the things that he's created, but he gets to share them.
Mm-hmm.
What did Yahweh do when he created Adam and he was in the garden with him? Didn't he have all of the various forms of life parade by so they could look at them and talk about them?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Show and tell, man. That's eternity.
Yeah.
So we have come in this psalm to understand our future, eternity with Yahweh. From the man who knew it better than anyone who has ever lived.
Yeah.
And you know what's beautiful about this? Yahweh could have just said in first person, this is what you're going to experience. But isn't it kind of neat in a way that he had this man write the lyrics to a song to share with us what he wants, what he's going to be doing, what we're going to be doing, how it's all going to play out in eternity?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think it helps us grasp it when it's shared to us from the perspective of a man that understood.
Yeah, you've had some great people call in, you know, when Chuck comes in with this thing, or I think it was Jason came in with that, and then Roy. My gosh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're having lots of people contribute profound, really powerful insights.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all growing as a result of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I really nothing more to add. This is, I want to thank you for leading us to the 23rd Psalm. I've never anticipated that it could have answered so many questions. Yeah, and I'm not even sure they were quite... wasn't really questions. It filled in some of the blanks. I mean, I feel like I'm more aware. And you know, it's just everything that Yahweh does. It's JB. It's just like you said. It's all consistent, but every layer adds an element of breadth and depth and excitement.
Yahweh's in the details.
Yeah, he's in the details. He is as much in the big picture, the whole panorama, as he is the individual strokes and colors and shades that comprise the picture.
Well, it's more than just one little add-on. I mean, you do a passage like this or some of the others, and you go, wow, it's just like a whole field of things have opened up. It's more than just an extra, arrow in my quiver. You know, it's not that. It's like, my gosh, look at, of course. Wow.
You know, when
it's a wow factor.
When I was in business and I was trying to share my enthusiasm for the value proposition that we were creating, I would always turn to the details. I would tell people all of the little things that made it special. And you could see that there's some people that, I didn't want to know, you know, how everything is bolted together and, you know, how the knee bone is connected to the shin bone. I know that you're excited. I mean, I'm glad you're excited about it, and I'm glad you've thought it through and that it all fits. And you see other people just, wow, hey, that's really exciting. Never thought of it that way. That makes sense. And I was always one of those guys that was passionate about how the details all work together to make something function effectively, to help you understand the core concept and the value proposition. And I sense Yahweh is just the same way, that he loves the details.
I think that's an understatement.
Yeah, he does. He loves the details and all the details, every little stroke.
We're talking about a guy who created a language where every... single letter conveys a story in and of itself. So,
yeah
I'd say he's into details.
Yeah.
Well, you're just, well, look at the universe that he created. We've got quarks and leptons,
mm-hmm.
and now gluons, and who knows how many
leptinos,
and who knows how tiny the little details are. You know, now they talk about colors of gluons and leptons and these kind of things that comprise protons and neutrons, and that how collectively with electrons they are the building blocks of matter, and this relationship between energy and matter. And you think about the tiny little details that are involved in everything that matters and that is matter, and then how there's this concept of a soul that can animate that same matter in such a way that it's alive, and that life and that matter is organized by the minute detail that is coded in a three-dimensional language called DNA. You know, and at that point, you look at the details that comprise this massive canvas that is the universe.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's into the details, all right.
How deep do you think inner space is? Does it go on forever?
Infinite.
Yeah, I think it's as deep as is outer space.
Yeah.
I think.
But we'll explore that too.
Outer space is growing at an infinite rate. Outer space is growing at an infinite rate. And I suspect that inner space is retreating at the same rate.
Wow.
This universe is expanding at a rate that vastly exceeds the speed of light. And since nothing could travel faster than the speed of light, that means that space itself is expanding. And space is expanding faster than the speed of light. At the same time, the universe is expanding at the speed of light. The space in the universe is expanding faster than the speed of light, and I think it's retreating at the same way. So, yeah, there are no limits to what we can explore. And next time we will be able to explore throughout all time, because he's going to create a universe that we will be able to witness the very birth of.
Mm.
I can't wait for that.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine the next Big Bang?
That's one of the things I really look forward to.
Oh, boy. Want to have a ringside seat, man.
Not just witnessing it, understanding everything that's going on as it happens.
Yeah, let's talk about the calculation that goes into this. Let's talk about what we're trying to achieve here. And to solicit our input. You know, what do you want to see? What do you want to be able to do?
That's really phenomenal.
Yeah, Yahweh's got this huge, enormous bag of gifts, and he's going to pursue us with all of those gifts for all eternity. Never a dull moment.
I guess not.
Well,
wow.
So anyway, fellas, I'm going to bid you adieu. We've done our 2 hours. The psalm is wonderful. Thank you for leading us to it.
Well, want to cover some of it on Monday and Tuesday as well, or is you
know,
for the audience?
I think I want to go back to questioning Paul.
Okay.
And let's make more headway through it, because the ultimate enemy is Christianity.
Sure.
I mean, it's the thing that is the most engaged at leading people away from God. Nothing is more effective at being evil today than Christianity. And I think that just as Yahweh is preparing us to engage bluntly and openly, and we're doing a marvelous job of exposing and condemning Islam and socialist secular humanism, I would like to see us work our way through questioning Paul. We're in the midst of that third chapter. We've just moved our way through circumcision. And now we're at Paul's next belligerent statement.
Is that where you were?
Yeah. Let's chapter expose 10. The condemned.
Okay. Chapter 3? Okay.
Chapter 3. Yep.
All right.
We're one statement past. The not even Titus, a Greek being, was compelled to be circumcised.
Not even Titus, I can find it.
Yeah.
All right, so I enjoyed it tremendously. Thank you very
Me
much.
Me too. Yeah, thank
and
you.
Thank you, JV.
Oh,
good night,
always
guys.
Glad to be.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.